This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Edward Group, and we're going to talk about his very good book, Health Begins in the Colon. He has a lot to say. This is an important show, so I hope you'll tune in for the whole hour. How are you, Ed?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Thanks for joining me.
I'm super happy to be on your show tonight.
Excellent book. Excellent book.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I think it's much needed just to get that information out to the public so they can, you know, make informed decisions and start changing their life.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, let's inform them about who you are and how to find you and how to find this book. Give us a little bit of information.
Okay, well, I have a background. Basically, I was trained as a child in the allopathic way, believe it or not, and so I kind of know both sides of medicine, although I was planning on going to get my degree and be a cardiac surgeon up until I met somebody right before I was applying to medical school who was into alternative therapies and was treating cancer successfully. And basically, you know, I thought he was a quack at that time, and, you know, he told me to prove him wrong and go to the library and look up a pharmaceutical and see how it works in the body, and I did that, and it only took me about 2 hours to realize that, you know, it's not going to do anything to really address the root cause of the problem. So I changed my whole career at that point in time and devoted my life to, you know, finding, you know, the root cause of disease and then helping people not only prevent disease but eliminate disease from their body. We had a cancer clinic in Houston, Texas for a while. We had real good success rates, and not only cancer, we were treating all sorts of degenerative illnesses. And then we were pretty much shut down because the big money that's involved and lobbied behind the pharmaceutical companies. So at that point in time, I decided to start sharing this information with the public, and that's what led me to the book, which is Health Begins in the Colon, because I traced back the root cause of all disease starts from the intestinal tract.
You know you're doing a good job when they come after you.
Yeah, pretty much. They were in my office twice last year, the FDA was, so they watch me pretty close, but, you know, now I'm able to actually help hundreds of thousands of people and, you know, spreading the word, and it's getting out there, and people are starting to realize, and I think we're making some progress now.
Well, let's get right down to the nitty-gritty, because you've got a lot to share. You know, I had no idea what the importance of a clean colon, or even that colon's got dirty, until a couple of years ago when I got involved in alternative medicine. So, first of all, why don't you just tell us, what are some symptoms of a dirty colon? How do we spot them? And then what are some things that causes it?
Well, the biggest symptom of a dirty colon is not having 2 to 3 bowel movements every day. You're going to notice, if you look at the type of cells that the colon is made up of, it's made up of epithelial cells, and it's the exact same cell that makes up the skin. So, I mean, if you were to flip the colon around on the outside, you would have your skin, and your skin is exposed to air, you know, and toxins every day as well. But the majority of toxins that come in to the body come in through the intestinal lining. And so what happens is that intestinal lining starts to become toxic, and those toxins start leaking back into the bloodstream. But there's many, many symptoms. People will notice the skin. They'll notice eruptions of the skin or any type of dermatitis. They'll notice bloating. They'll notice fatigue. It'll be hard to go to bed or hard to wake up in the morning. They'll notice abdominal pains, excess gas, stomach aches, or hemorrhoids, just a multitude of symptoms associated with bowel disease. I mean, pretty much any disease and any symptom in one way or another can be traced back to bowel disease.
Well, most people are going to say, oh, I just ate something that made me feel bad. What's the importance of that?
Well, because, you know, people aren't educated on the importance of the colon and the intestinal tract, and doctors aren't educated either. That's the problem. I mean, I've asked many of gastroenterologists to explain the digestive tract, and, you know, medical science still doesn't even know what the appendix does. I mean, you know, So without the general population, you know, and it's meant to be that way because if people really knew how simple it was, knew the importance of the intestinal tract, then, you know, we wouldn't have nearly the amount of disease we would have, and the pharmaceutical companies wouldn't be making trillions of dollars. So, I mean, I personally believe there's a reason doctors aren't taught the importance and the reason that, you know, we're kept, you know, not being informed properly about the appendix and about how the intestines work.
Well, let's talk a bit about some of the things we put in it, and then when we get through with that, I'm going to ask you what to do about it, some of the things that you found to do about it. But first of all, I also want you to tell us, how can they find you? What is your website? Where can
find me at healthbeginsinthecolon.com. That's the easiest way to find me, just the title of the book, healthbeginsinthecolon.com. Or they can just type my name in Google or something like that, Dr. Edward Group, and or my company, which is globalhealingcenter.com.
Okay. Now, what tell us about eating genetically modified foods, eating, being addicted to caffeine and sugars, white flours. Tell us about those things. What do those things do to our... Because that's mostly our diet nowadays, fats and those...
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really hard to get good food. And starting with genetically modified food, I mean, that name pretty much says everything in itself. Basically, scientists take a natural substance and alter the modification, the gene modification, to make it resistant to pests, to make it grow bigger, or to... alter the ingredients within the certain fruit. And when we eat that, that's like eating something that's been modified by man, and what it does is it strips the natural method of the food away from us. So not only that, a lot of people cook the genetically modified foods, and what we need is we need the live enzymes, the live nutrients in our system, because we live off of live foods. Dead foods would be contributed to death.
Right.
You know, and then to answer your question about sugar, that's one of the biggest problems we have, and that's really an addiction, and it starts even with young children drinking two liters of Coke or whatever every single day, and, you know, the sugar is refined sugar, and that just wreaks havoc on the digestive tract and causes, you know, the probiotics, the good bacteria in there to decline, and then cause overgrowth of bad bacteria such as yeast and candida and stuff like that. So,
now what's important of that? What does that do to you?
Well, what happens is when the sugar comes into the intestinal tract, a lot of times, because it'll be mixed in with, like, let's say somebody has a hamburger, french fries, and a dessert, you have proteins and you have starches and you have fats. Well, the sugars are fats, and when you combine all of those together and they sit in the system for a long period of time, anything over usually around 18 hours, the fats end up turning rancid, and the carbohydrates or sugars end up fermenting, and the proteins turn putrefactic. And what that means is you've just converted some, you know, form of minorly healthy ingredients into toxic, possible cancer-causing agents. So it's not only just one thing, but it's the combination of many foods mixing together in the stomach and in the intestinal tract that cause the conversion to toxic substances if they're not digested properly.
What about aspartame?
Aspartame is extremely toxic. Ever since the big scandal with the Gulf War, and when they shipped over all kinds of colas, diet drinks, and they sat in the sun for days at a time, what they found out was that the aspartame converts into formalin and formaldehyde at different temperatures. So anyone who drinks anything that has artificial sweeteners in it, not only aspartame, but sucralose and a few others, are going to inhibit possibly symptoms. And it's, you know, there's not enough studies, but there are studies out there that claim that the aspartame and the formaldehyde and everything else is associated with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, brain injuries, memory loss, and just overall poor health. And it can be toxic over time and even potentially cancer-causing.
Now, you said sucralose, and to the average person that's going to sound a lot like sucrose, something that's helpful. What is that?
Sucralose goes under the brand name of Splenda, and that is another synthetically made artificial sweetener that is, you know, potentially dangerous to the body.
Now, many people, the first thing they're going to say, what I encounter is when we tell them about these genetically modified foods and aspartame and Splenda, they're going to say, but the FDA approved it. What do we say about that?
I mean, if we had everything that the FDA approved, you know, reversed, then we would probably be healthy. I mean, if we just took everything that the FDA approved over the last 10 years and de-approved it, then we would probably, you know, not have near as much disease. But the deal with the FDA, I mean, you got to remember that the FDA, these big companies like Monsanto, which is the main company that does the genetically modified organisms, you know, they have millions of dollars to spend with lobbyists that go to Washington and lobby these things. And, I mean, for the first time ever, our government allowed patents for foods. I mean, you know, up until 50 years ago, there was, you know, it was illegal to patent any type of natural substance that grows from the earth. You can't patent oxygen in the air, but now the government's allowing these genetically modified scientific companies to actually patent these, and it's causing a big problem, you know, because they're wanting to destroy the natural crops and grow more of the genetically modified so they can make more money.
You know, one thing people don't realize about those things is the seeds won't even reproduce. And if those seeds won't reproduce, that should tell you something about what it's doing in your body. You know, genetically modified seeds.
Exactly. That's a great point.
You know, almost every pharmaceutical, when you read the excerpts on them, if you take this, you'll have significant gastrointestinal problems. Why does that happen? Because people don't understand that. They think, I don't know what they think, but they don't understand what it's doing to their body with pharmaceuticals. What does it do?
Okay, if you see chemicals on the outside, like if you go to, you know, a hardware store or something and you see a bunch of chemicals on the shelf and it says don't put it on your skin, you know, you may have a reaction. You know, it's basically the same as a side effect, because it would be the equivalent of you putting the acids or the stuff on your skin, because it's the digestive tract. The pharmaceutical medications are, most of the time, they are synthetically manufactured, which means it's not going to react properly. It could burn the bowel, it could cause inflammation in the bowel, it could cause, you know, it could stop some of the enzymes or kill some of the good bacteria in the bowel like antibiotics do. Basically, the pharmaceutical is going to cover up a symptom, reduce the body from secreting something, cover up a nerve ending for pain, or alter the body's natural process in some way or another. So if you take those and they go down into your intestinal tract, it's going, since that's the first line of attack, that's why most pharmaceuticals have something about gastrointestinal irritant, or may cause nausea, may cause vomiting, may cause bloating, may cause constipation, which about 60% of the pharmaceuticals do. So, you know, that should tell people alone that there's every pharmaceutical, when it contacts, you know, before it's broken down, the intestinal lining, that most likely it's going to cause something bad to happen.
So what do we do about these things, Ed? How do we detox from things like caffeine and sugar and cigarettes and lead and chemicals? How do we do that?
Well, the best way that I can recommend that people do that is slowly over a period of time. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do a lot of research is to identify every single toxin that people come in contact with on a daily basis at home or at work, and tell people, not just say, okay, you have to eliminate your coffee, you have to eliminate this, eliminate, and just eliminate everything from their lifestyle. Because I know from dealing with patients how hard that is, and that they need to really take it step by step, and just, you know, even if they eliminate one thing every month, they're still going up the stairs of health instead of down the stairs of health. But what people need to do is not necessarily, for sugar, for example, not necessarily eliminate sugar, but replace it with natural sources like raw, locally grown honey, xylitol, or agave nectar. You know, replace your white flour with, you know, sprouted grains, breads, you know, replace your table salt with Himalayan crystal salt or some sort of natural substance. So basically, it's just replacing the toxic things with good things. I mean, if you're on pharmaceuticals, reducing those pharmaceuticals, working with a good natural healthcare practitioner, and then substituting with some organic herbs that can take care of those same type of symptoms that you're dealing with.
What about coffee? So many people do that. Is that bad for you?
Well, coffee is bad. A lot of people think that it's the caffeine that's so bad for you, but really what happens is when they roast the coffee beans, they burn. I mean, coffee beans are like a reddish brown color when they're picked, but then when they're roasted, they turn dark, dark brown. And that's just like if you were to, you know, toast a piece of bread and you see those black lines on it, it converts the substances, the outer shell, to toxic nitrates and nitrites. And those are cancer-causing agents. So when you make coffee, you're going to have nitrates, nitrites, and you're going to have volatile oils. If you look real close at the top of coffee, you can see a small oil layer on there.
Mm-hmm.
Those are what really does the most damage. So what I recommend is people just reduce their coffee or, you know, slowly eliminate it from their diet. Or they replace it with natural coffees. And there's natural coffees now that contain a blend of herbs, and they taste exactly like regular coffee.
I didn't know that until I read your book.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's always a substitute. You know, there's always a solution for every situation.
So what do you think about hydrotherapy, what do you call that?
Colon hydrotherapy.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I think pretty much, you know, the only forms of intestinal cleansing that I would recommend would be colon hydrotherapy, sometimes using some bentonite clay, and sometimes maybe doing some enemas. But with those, colon hydrotherapy, enemas, bentonite clay, those usually are going to be going and focusing just on the large intestine. Which you're still leaving out the majority of the intestinal tract, which is the small intestine, too. So the only way that I've found to clean the full intestinal tract is by using oxygen or oxygen-based intestinal cleansers.
Now, when you use one of these cleansers, do you have to use probiotics with it? Because I did a colonic one time, and I didn't know that you had to use probiotics, and I got really sick.
You should, everybody should always be on probiotics, whether or not they're doing, you know, colon cleansing or not. Colon hydrotherapy is definitely an effective treatment, but I always recommend that, you know, even if you're fairly healthy, you should take good probiotics because you never know what you're going to be exposed to on a daily basis. Maybe just a good probiotic, a general probiotic, but I usually use what I found works the best is the Bacillus laterospora strain. That by itself, I've witnessed people with, you know, full-blown yeast and candida, just everything go away. And I probably tested just about every single probiotic out there.
So, my daughter has a bad candida problem. I know a lot of people have that problem. So how do you fix that?
It's amazing how many men and women and children have chronic.
She's only 14.
Candida.
But, you know, antibiotics did it, and you know I used them when I was a kid, and it eats away your gums. At least that's my understanding. Among other things. So how do you, and doctors don't believe that you really have it. They don't believe about systemic candida. What do you do?
No, they don't. I think it's one of the most, you know, underlying, you know, health concerns that we're dealing with. I mean, practically everybody I've talked to or evaluated had candida. And I've used two things successfully for years. I mean, I use an oxygen-based intestinal cleanser just to clean the intestines out really good. And I use organic oregano oil. And then I use a certain probiotic, the one I mentioned earlier, which is the Bacillus laterospora strain. And I've never had a problem since then. There's also a product called Mycozil out there that works really, really good. And that's really strong. And even if you have, you know, it's all in the fungus yeast type family. And usually, you know, if you have you'll have nail fungus or you'll have some other form of fungus on your body.
Mm-hmm.
And that product will knock everything out. But it's not that hard to get rid of if you're doing just a couple good things. The oregano oil has been used for years to as an antimicrobial, and some people actually use silver too.
Really? So a lot of many people think that when you have colon problems, that what you need to do is go and take some Equivax or some Castoria. Should they do that?
I don't think anyone should go use any of the laxative-based products out there because they're either stimulant-based, and what happens is it stimulates the bowel, and the bowel sucks water from the body to where it can expel. So it's more or less a synthetic way to cause the bowel to contract and suck up the water from the body that the body needs for detoxification, and then, you know, expel that. But those laxatives can cause dehydration. Those laxatives can contain mercury. You know, those laxatives are actually putting more toxins in the body, and what you're trying to do is you're trying to relieve the amount of toxins the body has to, you know, deal with on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. What about senna? I read, you know, that's one of the products that they use out there in studying that it's a natural thing, but isn't that a carcinogen?
Senna, cascara sagrada, and psyllium husk are three of the herbs that are probably in about 95% of the products out there for colon cleansing, and it just saddens me that so many people on late-night TV and, you know, all over the Internet have set up these sites and are basically scamming individuals with these low-grade, cheap herbs. I mean, all three of them. Senna has been known as a carcinogen. They all three can irritate the bowel lining. they work pretty much in the same way as the prescription laxatives do. Psyllium especially, you know, is a bulking agent, and that just swells up. And a lot of people have even had worse constipation and worse bowel problems with the psyllium. But another main point is that a lot of the companies out there today are, you know, in this to make money, and they're purchasing their herbs very cheap, expired half the time. They're getting them from China, they're getting them from India, especially the senna and the cascara and the psyllium. And those farms out there are basically watering their herbs with the runoff water from the city. And the FDA doesn't require the testing of herbs. I wish they did because, you know, that would, you know, half the natural medicine companies now were bought up by pharmaceuticals in the last 3 years. And so, you know, once again, we're just getting not good herbs in those products. And not only that, who knows how many toxins and heavy metals and pesticides and insecticide residue and everything else were on those herbs that you're taking.
Now, one thing that your book is so much more than just about the colon. I mean, it focuses on that, but you wrote about something in your book that was frightening about our meat and how the slaughterhouses treat our meat. Can you talk about that a little bit and educate the listeners about that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, you know, are you talking about the rendered food plant?
Yes, I couldn't believe that. That was...
Well, the slaughterhouses are bad, too, because the animals, when they're slaughtered, are schizophrenic. And if you know anything about the quantum physics, you know, those energy signatures and those emotions that those cattle are, you know, going through get transposed into the meat tissue. And it's just extremely bad for, you know, for us to be eating that meat, you know, especially after the animal had to go through such a torturous, you know, death. But... The thing is, with the meat, you have not only that, but you have antibiotics that the cows were shot up with. You have bovine growth hormone that the cows were shot up with. But what I was talking about with the rendered food, this is what they do with all of the remaining animals that die everywhere, and the rejected meats in the supermarkets. They send them to these rendering plants. And basically, it's just a big stockpile. A lot of them are down in Mexico of dead animals. All the animals, the euthanasia animals from all the veterinarian clinics that, you know, put dogs and cats and everything else to sleep, they all go get tied up in, you know, black body bags, and they go into this big pit. And, you know, it's pretty graphic what happens, and they basically just churn, you know, through all these animals and then boil them, and then they suck the water out, and that's where you get a lot of the feed. So basically, it's a recycling system. All the dead animals are going to these plants, and then they're making food out of them again, and then they're refeeding them to the animals. So when you mix that many animals together with all these drugs and, you know, all the stuff inside of them, you know, that's something you don't want to be putting back into the food chain, but that's what happens. So it's really recycling of dead animals.
The decay that you talked about, that was sickening. That was disgusting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it really is.
So what do we do?
Well, we do, you know, exactly what you're doing, is just try to spread the word as much as we can. Just try to educate people. I mean, it's only going to take when people are educated to, that they stand up and do something about it. And, you know, we are making some progress. The first vaccination case not too long ago was won in court in favor of the parents and the child that was vaccinated. And, you know, that was a big deal
the
for the natural
case?
Medicine field. What's that?
Was that the Hawaii case?
I think this was, I want to say Alabama or something, I'm not sure what state it was in.
So do you recommend they eat range-fed food? I mean, meat? What kind of meat do they eat? Or do you not
recommend eating meat at all? You know, reducing the amount of meat that people eat over a period of time. But if they are going to eat meat, yes, I recommend range-fed, comes from an organic farm, non-cruelty-based, and if possible, support the local farmers in your area. I know that most cities now have local co-ops or they have a local farmer's market on the weekends, and just, you know, find where those are and go over there. You can usually get range-fed organic meats that aren't, you know, contaminated.
Okay, let's talk a few minutes about what to do to fix these things, because you sent me, you sell products that you have found work for you, and you sent me some of them, and they were quite amazing. So let's say somebody wants to detox from heavy metals. What do they do?
First thing that I recommend people doing, which, you know, is following a specific order. You don't have to follow an order, but I found that it works really, really good if you start with intestinal cleansing, and you could do like a 7-day or a 6-day intestinal cleanse, and then move on to either 1 to 3 liver and gallbladder cleanses.
Okay, well, let's stop right there. You've got listed in your book, you have some very easy protocols, such as using apple cider vinegar and some grains and things. Let's talk about some of those so people can understand how easy this is to do.
Okay. Just well, in the book, I do the 6-day oxygen colon cleanse, and basically that's just taking 6 days and eating nothing but fruit and making an intestinal cleansing drink, and that contains the lemon juice, the aloe vera, special type of water, and, you know, just cleansing your system for 6 days. Some people don't want to do 6 days with nothing but fruit. So for those people, I did a 7-day cleanse, which is where they can just eat healthy during the 7 days and then just take the oxygen intestinal cleanser in the evening time. But, you know, I try to make the cleanses as simple as possible, because if you look back a couple years ago, I mean, cleansing has really come a long way just in the last few years. It used to be where you had to take time off of work, it was a pain to do, you had to mix these concoctions together that just tasted horrible, barely getting them down. I mean, the whole cleansing process was just a, you know, people did not look forward to it. What I wanted to do was change that and make it easy and refreshing for people, and something that's not so, you know, that they're going to dread to do.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a minute about oxygen. So many of the conventional doctors say, don't do it. It's dangerous. Don't put oxygen in your body. Peroxide, for example. So tell us why it's okay to use this product, and it's does more good.
Well, because oxygen is the number one element that we need to survive, and it's depleting from the atmosphere at an alarming rate. And even Otto Warburg, years ago, which is a 2-time Nobel Prize winner, stated that most of the disease that we're going to be dealing with in the future is going to be caused by an oxygen deficiency. So we're basically running low on oxygen. We've gone from like 28% oxygen in the air, you know, 200, 300 years ago, down to about 6% oxygen in some cities in the United States. So oxygen is just a universal cleanser. It's what cleanses our air. It's what cleanses, you know, the body. It helps cleanse the body. So, and it's the safest. You know, it's pretty much universal. Anybody can take oxygen with, you know, nobody's allergic to oxygen. So it's just a universal cleanser, and that's why I chose and have used oxygen for a long time. And, you know, like you touched on, that's why the general medical profession doesn't want people to know how good oxygen is as a healing agent. And it's free, I mean, in most cases.
And you're not talking about walking around with an oxygen tank. So how do you do it?
Well, you know, originally in 1898, Nikola Tesla and Eugene Bloss were sitting in a hotel room, and they figured out a way to stabilize what I call monatomic oxygen, or an oxygen singlet. Most people think oxygen O2. There's a more reactive type of oxygen, which is O1. The O1, they figured out how to stabilize on using a certain blend of magnesium oxides, and that would release over a period of 18 or 24 hours into the system. And when they released the monatomic oxygen, basically that singlet will grab onto a toxin or some compacted fecal matter that's in your bowel, and it'll oxidize it and reduce it, and that means it'll take a solid matter and turn it either into a liquid or a gas form. So, you know, what we did was we based our technology off of that and created, you know, oxy powder so people could have something simple and easy to take at night when they sleep. And when they sleep, you know, this oxygen is bubbling through all of that compaction and all that gunk in the intestinal lining. And when they wake up in the morning, they get to have a bowel movement.
Mm-hmm. And it's just capsules.
It's capsules.
It doesn't
vegetarian
taste bad.
Capsules.
It's not hard to take. Just capsules,
vegetarian
right?
capsules, and it also contains germanium-132, which is another oxygen carrier and releaser, and it's absolutely great for the immune system.
Now, one thing I wanted to talk about was, and I forgot to ask you about this, when you do those things that we're talking about, X-Lasix and things,
mm-hmm.
it takes away your... magnesium and potassium and things, doesn't it?
Pretty much, depending on how, well, that would be,
your
you know, how much you're, it depends on what you're eating during the day, but for the most part, yes, it will strip the body of all that. Those are your electrolytes, and that's what causes the dehydration, because it strips those electrolytes from your blood and from your body fluids and then expels it. That's magnesium and calcium and potassium and mm-hmm. phosphorus.
When someone has colon cancer, how long does it take for the bowel to be sick before it comes? And then once it comes, are there some early symptoms, polyps? You know, is there some kind of symptom that someone can have to know that, uh-oh, I need to pay attention to this?
Probably the first symptom is just, you know, or what you should do is just pay attention for symptoms. I mean, a lot of times people just get in the habit of forgetting about their bowels and not paying attention to how many bowel movements they're having, not paying attention to, you know, if they're having to strain really hard. So the first step I would say as a preventative measure would be to start paying attention to your bowels. Pay attention if you get bloating or pains after certain types of meals. Just pay attention to your bowel habits. Pay attention to your bowel consistency. Pay attention to the bowel color. And then, you know, the initial stages of cancer would be an underlying bowel condition, whether it be IBS, whether it be a diarrhea, Crohn's disease, anything like that. But usually cancer will stem from some polyps. Usually polyps develop around age 30 or 40, and, you know, a polyp is just a malignant or non-malignant growth inside, looks like a little mushroom cloud kind of, inside the intestinal lining. Those, probably about 80% of the time, that's a warning signal, but you can't see them unless you have some sort of colonoscopy done or, you know, an evaluation. And those most likely will go into cancer in the bowel. cancer in the bowel is not, you know, it's actually one of the highest cancer rates now is in the bowel, and it's projected that 1 out of 3 people will come down with colon cancer in the next 5 years. So, I mean, it's a very, very serious situation that we're dealing with, but, I mean, you can look for a little bit of blood, dried blood in the stool, abdominal pain. A lot of people don't know that they have colon cancer until it's too late,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, unless they're going in for routine colonoscopies. And the colonoscopy is where they just insert a small video camera into the anal cavity and then go up through and basically look on the sides of the walls of the intestinal lining to see if there's any type of growths in there. The good news, though, is colon cancer is one of the easiest forms of cancer to treat naturally. Most cases are slow growing, and since we do have a lot of intestinal tract, I don't recommend chemotherapy, surgery, or radiation, only in severe cases. And I can think of one case that I recommended a lady have a resection where they actually, you know, the tumor was blocking completely the bowel, and they just they clip the intestines on one side of the tumor, clip it on the other side of the tumor, and then reattach the large intestine. And in that case, you know, you're taking out a huge tumor, and then you're able to bombard the body with all kind of natural methods so that it doesn't grow back.
I want to ask you a question that I want a quick answer to, because then I want to ask you some other things about healing colon problems and cancers. And it's kind of not a nice question, but one that would help someone. Do they need to pay attention to the size, the diameter of their stools?
The diameter is not as important as the consistency than the color. You know, you don't want to have hard and lumpy stools. You don't want to have runny stools. You don't want to have green stools or different colored stools. You want to have like a light brown, peanut buttery consistency, and you know, not lumpy along the way, but rather smooth. That would be a perfect bowel.
Seems to me if it's, you know, very thin, that it would indicate that your colon would have significant buildup on the inside of it.
Well, if you notice a child, when a child has a bowel movement...
That's what made me think about it. I have an 8-year-old. I noticed it today.
You know, a child has a bowel movement, and it's pretty large and big, and then as we age, it seems the bowel size gets smaller and smaller, and a lot of that is because of the compaction in there. But that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because a ribbony stool like that could also mean that there's a polyp in the bowel, and that would be another symptom or a warning sign.
Yeah, I don't think that ever crosses people's mind, the size of that thing. But I thought about that this morning when I saw my child. Okay.
It doesn't cross anybody's mind. You know, a lot of people, believe it or not, another problem with bowel consistency is people just do not like, some people actually, believe it or not, will not go to the bathroom at their work. And they just don't like to go to the bathroom. They wait too long. It's like they feel the first urge, and they just, you know, kind of blow it off. Then the second urge, then the third urge. And then, you know, when they just can't hold it anymore, they run to the bathroom. So another thing I recommend is people just listen to their body, and when they feel that urge, just take a break and just go to the bathroom, because the more that you keep that in, the body will start reabsorbing that, and that'll start going into your bloodstream.
Yeah, I don't think people understand about the seepage that goes on through the colon wall.
Well, the reason why there's so much seepage is what I was talking about before, is the foods aren't digested properly and they're mixed improperly, and they become very acidic. Like meat is very acidic, coffee is very acidic, alcohol is acidic, sugar is acidic. Most of the stuff, cooked meats, cooked meals, microwaved foods, I mean, 99% of everything that people eat is acidic in nature, and that means it literally burns small holes through the intestinal lining. And that's called leaky gut syndrome, and that's, you know, once those holes are burned through the intestinal lining, then those toxins and those chemicals can start leaking back into the bloodstream.
Wow. So if you have someone that has colon cancer, let's say not too terrible of a case, early cancer, what are natural ways to treat it? Because I don't think people really believe that. Nobody I've met believes it when I tell them. What are some natural ways that a naturopath or someone could do to prevent them from having surgery?
Well, the first thing is they would have to, each individual is different. And, you know, this was really, really big when in my practices. By the time someone finds out they have cancer, you know, that healing process is probably 75% psychological and emotional. And, when we had our best success rates, we focused 75% of our time with the patients on giving them hope, talking to them about their emotions they had held in inside of them, you know, releasing these emotions, letting them know that this could be, you know, motivating them on a daily basis. That's a big part of it. So, I mean, it's not like you could just get, you know, go see any naturopathic doctor and they could give you, you know, some natural remedies mm-hmm. for that. There's more involved on an emotional level and a spiritual level than on the physical level, and everything has to be looked at individually. But some of the things that we used ozone. We used ozone insufflations anally. We used 714X. We used cesium chloride.
I didn't realize you used that.
We used Laetril B17. We used poly-MVA. We used agaricus mushroom. We used carnivora. We've used Rife technology. You know, many, many things in the arsenal. Most of the stuff you won't find on any shelf here. We used Ukraine. Most of it had to be ordered specifically from clinics or specialty companies, SEACT, from around the world. But those were some of the things that we used.
When you use Rife technology, is that frequency medicine? What do you do there?
Yes, it's frequency medicine. Royal Raymond Rife developed a machine called the Rife machine that you know about in 1920. And, you know, there are some machines out there. Most of them that I've tested are not as effective against cancer, but they are effective for some of the other things. Rife's original machine, I actually had the privilege to go through Rife's original lab manual myself. And, you know, the problem with some of the machines today, Rife's original machine was made out of quartz glass and it was made out of helium. The machines today are made out of neon and argon and they're using leaded glass for the tubes. So, you know, my diagnosis on that is that they're not doing, you know, the machines the right way and there's some sort of frequency interruption when the frequencies go through the leaded glass tubes instead of the quartz tubes.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever use any kind of intention-based machine? Just curious.
Such as? Like the is the QXCI intention-based?
I don't know, but I was just thinking about, you know, Bill Tiller's work and what he's doing. Doesn't even have to be intentions, but do you ever use any kind of, I mean, a machine, do you ever use any kind of intention? I'm just curious.
I think intention is a big part of the healing process. So, you know, every patient, we would customize their program depending on what our evaluation was, and that would include what forms of therapy we thought were going to be the best for that individual patient, you know, after our assessment. Most doctors spend an average of 5 to 7 minutes with their patients, and that is where everything goes backwards. It's so important to spend, you know, time with patients. By the time, I'll spend as much time with them as I need, and usually you'll be able to pinpoint exactly what's causing their problem. I mean, I had a guy that was going to so many doctors, and no one could figure out what was wrong with him. And, you know, after I was doing an intensive history on the guy, I figured out that what was causing his problems was because he had mold everywhere in his house, and no one had even taken the time to, you know, inspect or look at his home environment or mm-hmm. or look at what could be causing his problem. And then I had another patient, an 18-year-old kid that had testicular cancer. No one could figure out what was going on, why, you know, he could possibly have that. And then we went and inspected his house, and right directly below his testicles in the ground, where under his bed where he was sleeping, under the house, was a major fault line in the earth.
Really?
And it was, you know, putting up, you know, blockages mm-hmm. and electromagnetic and signals and strong magnetic impulses, and it literally we believe that's one of the reasons, because he was a healthy kid, that they, that he had testicular cancer. So, I mean, everything has to be looked at, and every case is different.
Do you take insurance, or does all this have to be paid by the patient?
Oh, no, I'm not seeing patients anymore. I'm not, you know, I'm really not allowed to see patients, and haven't been for years. But these were some, just a few of the cases that that we saw, just to give you an example of, you know, how you go about determining what needs to be addressed in their treatment program, such as intention.
Do you have you heard about the new problem that's going around, Morgellons disease?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I have, and I developed a protocol for that initially about 3 years ago and presented it to the Morgellons organization and never heard back from them.
What do you think it is? Do you think it's a nanotechnology?
It's either, I'm not sure exactly what it is. You know, I've worked a lot with it. I know how to get rid of it, but I'm not exactly sure what it is. You know, the fibers, even when they're trying to determine what the fibers are, they still don't even, it's like it's not even from this earth.
Right.
So it's something that is creating some form of, you know, it's either some other life form or some bad experiment gone bad by the U.S. government, and, you know, was, you know, sprayed in the air through chemtrails or something like that.
So what do you think heals it or makes it go away?
I found that a certain type of quantum-based, it's not a colloidal silver, but it's more of a angstrom colloid silver in high doses. That with a sodium chloride formula, which was just called Halox, we use that, and then we use the Rife technology, seemed to be working fairly effective for
That's
that.
That's
go ahead.
That's what I thought. It's some kind of frequency medicine. It's going to have to be the ultimate thing, I think.
Yes. And there was some supports of some, like some ozone bagging of the areas when you rub it with water and DMSO and then bag the area with ozone.
Uh-huh.
That's shown to be a little bit effective on that as well. And then using an internal formula of a black salve, which is a combination of galangal root, zinc chloride, and some of them contain poke root and a couple other ingredients.
Interesting. So I'm going to give you a few minutes to talk. We got about 7 minutes. Talk about whatever you want to talk about that we haven't covered, or even if it's something we have covered, if we didn't get something as well as you want to do it.
Well, I think probably the most important thing is the reason why, you know, both of us are here is just to help as many people as we can. And I would recommend that people, you know, take a serious look at their living environment and their diet, and it's not as hard as you think to clean things up. You can start replacing everything. I mean, disease is caused from a toxic overload, and that's basically why. I mean, the body is taking in too many toxins and can't get rid of as many toxins as it's taking in. And the body's going to take in, you know, toxins from food, water, beverages, air. Parasites are another big thing that people have, and in order to address the root cause is the key that people need to know. I mean, there's plenty of herbs you can take, which are, if you think about it, let's say you had a headache and you went to your medical doctor, you might get a prescription medication for pain to take care of your headache. Well, if you went to the natural doctor, you might get some white willow bark, or you might get an herb to take care of that headache. But did you address the root cause of the headache? No, you didn't. Regardless of whether you took an herb to cover it up or to fix, you know, reduce it somehow or another, or whether you took a prescription. The benefit of the herb, though, is that you're not going to have any side effects, and you're actually going to probably get some good response out of it. But you're not guaranteed to address the root cause. The headache could have been coming from the bowel. The headache could have been coming from something you ate. I mean, so really what my focus is teaching people to address the root cause of their illnesses and their suffering, and that means cleaning up their environment and cleaning up their body. You know, regular intestinal cleansing 2 times a week, you know, most people would say, really, that's a lot, but, I mean, you give your skin a shower every day, and your intestines are exposed to, you know, 2-3 pounds of stuff every day, and yet they're not getting a shower like your skin. So regular cleansing the body, and everything that enters the body that causes toxicity enters through the intestinal lining. And so if you keep your intestines clean and prevent that from coming into the body in the first place, then you can start really getting your body back to shape and, you know, cleansing your body, and then start eliminating or replacing the toxic things in your diet and in your environment. I mean, just the air quality alone in your house could be contributing to massive amounts of toxins in your body. So you just take, you know, $200 and you can get a nice air purification system, and you just eliminated 400,000 toxins. And then you replace your microwave with a convection oven or something like that, and then you just reduce your toxins on a daily basis even more. You know, do a parasite cleanse, do liver and gallbladder cleansing, and then do chemical and heavy metal cleansing. Once you get done with all those cleanses, you're in pretty good shape, and then you can start eliminating the toxins from your environment.
I tell you, when I go to the health store, I have no idea which product to choose. Do you have products that you know that work?
I research probably about 4,000 different products. I'm very, very picky because most of the products out there have fillers and binders and excipients and toxic chemicals and byproducts in them. And they're, you know, we were the first company in the world to start doing nutraceutical supplements using fully organic and wildcrafted herbs. No one would ever do it because the cost structure is so high. But I don't want to jeopardize that. So, you know, we do have, you know, all the supplements, or if we don't have a supplement that people like, then they can, you know, ask us, what do you recommend about this? But my whole thing is you shouldn't really have to be on a lot of supplements. I do think you need to be on a good multivitamin or mineral supplement. I think you need to keep your intestinal tract cleansed. But if you're eating and your body's functioning properly, you really shouldn't have to be on a lot of nutritional supplements for a long period of time.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us one more time when we can find you. The hour's flown by.
I know. It's already been an hour.
I know.
They can find out more information. I have all kinds of free information, free newsletter, monthly newsletters that teaches you and keeps you updated on all the new things and how to change your life and how to, you know, change your living environment.
DVD.
Yeah, I have a Secret to Health DVD, and it's all available at just healthbeginsinthecolon.com or globalhealingcenter.com.
Well, thanks very much, Ed, for coming on. I'd like for you to come back sometime if you don't mind.
I would love it, and thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Great book, too. I really recommend it. It's a great book. I read a lot, too, and it's one of the best.
Thank you.
So thanks a lot.
The book is for the people. That's what it's for.
It's a good one.
All right.
Thank you. And agape to you.
Thank you.
Good night.
All right. Good night.